Hello and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. You're joining us for our second live show, so I hope that you'll write down the phone number and call us later on in the show and get in the conversation. But today I'm speaking with Dr. Roy Curlin and Peter Wolfgang, who is from the Family Institute of Connecticut. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
So I thought we'd like to talk a little bit about family and family life in Connecticut in particular, but you know, in the United States in general. We just had the Pope come and visit from Rome, and brought a lot of enthusiasm for the church and for family life. And just what are the struggles that families face trying to raise children in today's society? Roy, I'm going to start with you because I know you have 8 children, so I know you worry about how you're going to give your values to your children with outside influences undermining you at every point.
Being a parent these days is a challenge in lots of different ways. Being a parent with religious convictions, with a pro-life perspective, with a pro-family perspective is perhaps even more exponentially challenging. And I do worry about that. And certainly, the fact that I have 8 children gives a series of interesting reactions from people as they hear about it, and it goes from extreme disbelief to sometimes some positive comments, and isn't that great? We don't see that very often, very much anymore.
Right. When do you? I know that a lot of times you don't really realize a lot of things in society until you do have kids. I knew a lot of things like hit me, smack in the face as soon as I started having children. When was the first time you realized that it's not easy raising children in today's society?
I think it was as soon as we had our second child in particular. People said, okay, you're done now, right? Well, no, whatever God gives us. And what do you mean by that? That's really weird. And then I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to be facing this attitude a lot of the times.
Right.
And then we subsequently decided, with a lot of thought and prayer, to homeschool our children. And again, it's outside the norm. Society sort of looks askance at people who are outside the what they consider to be normal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to explain that at every juncture, to just say my wife has got a doctoral level degree, and she's perfectly capable of
working outside the home.
Yeah, and certainly she's got the education to school our children all the way through to college level. We believe that no one can give a better education. No one cares for your children more than the parents. And it's not to say that everyone should homeschool, by no means. But when you do, it should be a positive thing. But we mm-hmm. regularly face the fact that it's not. And in society and in schools, with the compulsory sex education at young ages, and you hear in the news, and probably Peter could talk to more about this than I, kids as young as grades 1, 2, or 3 getting sex education, getting indoctrinated with the concept of same-sex marriage, two parents of the same gender, etc. With that engulfing society, and slowly over the last maybe 10 to 20 years becoming what people consider to be normal, being a parent of a standard family, a large family who homeschools, I'm continually bombarded by negative mm-hmm. Feelings from people.
Peter, why do you suppose that is? Why do people, and I've seen it myself, why do people look so strangely upon people who have more than 2 children?
Well, because there's so few of us right now. There was this Pew Study Forum that was done about a month ago, and about religion in America. And one of the most interesting statistics to come out of that study was that among the Catholic population in the United States, only 4% of American Catholics have 4 or more children.
Hmm.
So that's the bad news, that only 4% of Catholic laity appear to be living the sort of full life that Roy is talking about being open to God's generosity, God's blessing. But, you know, I want to say something, listening to Roy, that no matter how bad it may look in Connecticut, no matter how dark it may seem at times on these family issues, on abortion, same-sex marriage, what have you, you know, this constant assault on our most basic, most obvious, most precious values, someday we're going to win. And we're going to win because there are more and more people in Connecticut, like Roy, who have 8 children.
Right.
And, you know, you see this when you go around speaking, that the media, they haven't quite caught on to this, but I see this in the venues that I'm at, that I'm invited to a lot, that folks like Roy, there's more and more of them out there. There's folks who are open to hearing what God has to say, open to being sacrificially loving in terms of understanding that children are a blessing. Children are not our enemy. Children are a gift that God wants to bestow upon us, to bless us with. So I think that in itself is a very hopeful sign for the future. And one of the things that encourages people like Roy and people like me, I have 4 children, is Pope Benedict and his great successor, Pope John Paul II. You mentioned how Pope Benedict was just here in the United States, and my goodness, what an incredible week for the church in America. This is a man who really, really loves America and really loves the Catholic Church in America. And, you know, I took my 2 oldest daughters, who are ages 7 and 5, to Yankee Stadium a few days ago to be present at the Pope's Mass. And my 7-year-old was just, the level of excitement, it was indescribable. It meant so much to her. And for me, it was like watching her, it was like coming full circle. Because when I was 9 years old, back in 1979, Pope John Paul II came to Boston and my grandparents took me to see him.
Wow.
And it was, you know, to this day, they still describe, my grandparents are still alive, they're in their 80s now. They still describe my reaction and how excited I was. And watching Elizabeth, now my 7-year-old, it's exactly what I was experiencing in 1979. And Pope John Paul II in 1979, Pope Benedict XVI last Sunday, they're here to, you know, as Peter was called to do by our Lord himself, to confirm and strengthen his brethren in the faith. And one of the ways they do that is to strengthen us to live that full life, to have that, to be open to God's generous gift. You know, Benedict, in a lot of his homilies throughout the week, especially the one to youth on, I think it was Saturday, he talked about how our Christian faith, our Catholic faith, it's not a set of moralisms. It's not merely a set of rules. It's about being open to the one person, the one who we can always trust, the one who will never fail us. It's about entering into that relationship with a living person who is Christ, who is the Lord, and allowing yourself to be transformed by that. It's not a set of thou shall nots. It's more grasping onto something positive.
And he kept reiterating, too, that once you give up your will, that's when you give your freedom.
Right.
You know, because we're so all about freedom. But
self-surrender.
Right, right.
That's true freedom. That's what I hear when I listen to Roy talk about his 8 children, and that's what I see in so many other venues, and it's happening. That new springtime that our late Holy Father spoke of, it is happening, I think, under this current Holy Father. You see it more and more. So the family, you know, we are on the ropes, especially in a place like Connecticut. There's a lot of ways in which we're being attacked, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in the course of this show. But, you know, we ought to start by mentioning the good news. And
right.
There is a lot of good news, and Roy and his family and other families like that are one example.
And we were there at Yankee Stadium also with the 8 children, and you mentioned a feeling of optimism and hope, and I absolutely agree. And it was, as you say, you know, in many other places I feel a degree of being set upon, being, you know, defensive. There I felt nothing but hope and optimism and positive feeling and people complimenting the children, and it was just a terrific terrific time.
Very uplifting.
But where does the animosity come from? Because it really baffles me that, you know, it's really nobody's business how many children you have, you know. In fact, people should be like so happy to see such a great family. Where does the animosity come from? Where is it where do people get off judging? That's where I'm.
Well, again, you know, in answer to your question, I find my mind going back to Pope Benedict and things that he said, to the extent that we've lost a sense of truth. If nothing is true, if everything's relative, and you have your truth and I have my truth, but there's no such thing as the truth, an objective truth to which we are all beholden, to which we're all challenged by, and which we all have to adhere to, well, then the only thing that's left is my own desires and whatever I want. And if that's all there is, as a result, you can kind of be shut up in yourself, and you can kind of tend to view other people as enemies to be conquered or to prevent
competing.
Them from... Competitors, including even your own spouse or your own children or the people with whom you ought to be experiencing that communion of love that we're called to. And I think that's where it comes
from. That's very profound. I mean, when you really think about it, because it is. It's all about, you know, you can't have more children than two because, you know, you're using up, you know, the resources of Earth. It's like it's one big competition. And it's very profound that you say we should be, you know, sharing with everybody all of God's, you know, gifts. You know,
and in doing that, in surrendering, in that self-surrender, you will find your true happiness.
Absolutely.
Your true happiness, your true fulfillment will not come through viewing everyone as competitors and making sure that, you know, I've got mine and no one better take it away from me and whoever has the most toys when he dies wins. That sort of attitude is the antithesis of true happiness. Pope Benedict is pointing us towards a better way, and hopefully after this week, America will be listening.
And sometimes I've challenged people when they have challenged me with the concept. I say, you know, if they have one child, or maybe they have two children, I say, did you give that second child 50% of your love, and the first child the other 50? You split it in two? No, I love them all both equally. I said, well, on that basis, I have four times as much love in my life as you, and they think about it. And it hits them. I mean, it's not about dividing it's multiplying the benefits, the graces, the love that God has given you, and that's what I think Pope Benedict is sort of talking about, maybe somewhat peripherally, but to me it comes down to love, to God, to what He's giving you, and responding to it rather than saying it's about me, which is what you're saying.
Absolutely. A very, very positive message. You know, it's funny, Pope Benedict, in his former role when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, he had this reputation as being the stern one who laid down the law. And, you know, now after this week, hopefully America got to see him a little better and saw that that's not Joseph Ratzinger, that's not Pope Benedict at all. It's a very positive, life-affirming message in the Christian faith. And that's all the Pope is doing, is sharing with us the faith that comes to us through the apostles, from the Lord Himself, is a very positive, life-affirming message.
And that kind of brings us to the Family Institute of Connecticut. You know, the Pope did reiterate, I don't know how many times, that, you know, Catholics have to be stewards of the truth, you know, and live our lives, you know, evangelizing the truth. And I think the Family Institute of Connecticut does just that. It's a great organization. Tell us a little bit about the Family Institute of Connecticut, and then we'll talk a little bit about the issues that you guys are facing right now.
Thanks. Yeah, I'd be happy to. You know, and I should say one thing that Pope Benedict has called us Catholics to do, and this came out a little bit too in his homily at Yankee Stadium, is to work together with other like-minded Christians from other denominations and other people who of goodwill who share our values to fight for our shared common beliefs in the public square on the sanctity of marriage, the sanctity of human life. And that's what the Family Institute does. We are an ecumenical organization. We're not specifically Catholic.
Right.
We were actually founded by folks here in Connecticut who were associated with Focus on the Family, which is an evangelical Protestant organization out of Colorado, and we're sort of like their local affiliate. We're the voice of social conservatism here in the state of Connecticut, deep blue Connecticut. We're fighting against abortion or same-sex marriage. These are viewed as the icky issues, the issues you're not supposed to talk about in the public realm here in Connecticut. Well, it falls to the Family Institute and to me to lead that battle, to say, yes, there are terrible things going on. There are things permitted by law or ways in which the law is trying to be distorted to allow things that are not in people's best interests. And it falls to me to bring some of that message, the message of Pope Benedict and also of Dr. James Dobson, and frankly, of just plain common sense of natural law, that, look, this is what the family is. Marriage is between a man and a woman. The unborn are human beings, members of our own species, made in the image of God, deserving of all the same dignity, all the same legal protections as the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do in a variety of venues, and in venues like this where I speak to television and radio and newspapers and up at the state capitol as well.
And you also have a website that people can go to.
We do.
And I know that you rally people at different times of the year to have our voices heard at the state capitol and on different issues. What, right now, we're in the legislative session.
We have about 2 weeks to go.
Finishing one. What were some of the challenges this legislative session?
Well, there were about 2 weeks to go, and we had a number of challenges. I should mention, too, you mentioned our website. The website is CT, as in Connecticut, ctfamily.org. And I would invite people to go to our website to learn more about the Family Institute and what we do. But we're actually three organizations. We have the C3, which is our flagship, our educational organization. We also have a C4, Family Institute of Connecticut Action, through which we do most of our lobbying up at the state capitol. And this was probably our most active year yet up at the state capitol. And it's too soon to say. There's a couple weeks left. But this may turn out to be our best year yet. Yeah, let's pray for that. There's 2 weeks left. All the crazy stuff happens in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. But, well, let me tell you, there were three or four bad bills that we were trying to defeat and about three good bills, pro-family bills, that we were trying to pass. And just by way of example, the first bill that we were trying to defeat was an incremental pro-same-sex marriage bill. It was a bill that would have forced Connecticut to recognize out-of-state same-sex marriages. It would have also created, or it would have begun the process to create, a tax credit paid for by all of us in Connecticut that would have gone only to same-sex couples in civil unions, because they don't get the tax breaks from the federal government that the rest of us get. So they wanted all of us, all the taxpayers of Connecticut, to pay for their disagreement with the
federal government.
And, you know, I went up there and testified against this bill. We brought a lot of our members up, and because of that, we killed the bill in committee.
Wow.
This is the Judiciary Committee, the most radical committee.
Which is run by two homosexuals.
Right, run by two openly gay legislators, Senator Andrew McDonald from Stanford, Representative Michael Lawler from East Haven, both champions of the pro-same-sex marriage cause, and they're the co-chairmen of the committee. We have not had a victory in that committee in 5 years.
Wow.
It's been 5 years since we were able to kill a bill in that committee. And we defeated this bill, and it was just a wonderful, incredible victory. And people on both sides of the aisle told us afterwards that my testimony had something to do with it, that tax credit, by the time I testified, that hearing had been going on for 12 hours.
Wow.
And no one had bothered to mention the tax credit until I did. And that had a lot to do with killing that bill, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. And also all our members who came up and testified as well, they saw the level of opposition, and they pulled the bill back and they let the bill die in committee. There was a bill that made it through that committee, a transgendered special rights bill. These are folks who have had sex change operations or are cross-dressers or hermaphrodites, a whole cluster of basically varying degrees of gender identity confusion. These folks feel that they're a special class and that they want the law to recognize them as such, as an oppressed class. If this bill passed, there'd be nothing you could do, for instance, if your second grade teacher, Mr. Smith, wanted to come in one day dressed as Mrs. Smith. You know, you'd have to let the kids be exposed to that sort of confusion. So that bill made it through committee. We're fighting that. There are two sex ed bills that we're fighting. One we defeated. The other is still floating around at the legislature. It's been heavily amended so that it doesn't have, it's not as horrible a bill as it was, we still don't like, we're opposed on principle to the idea that sex ed is something that should be taught in the public schools. So we're still trying to defeat that bill. Another victory is a bill that would have allowed adoptees to ascertain their, to get their birth certificates so that they could find out who their birth parents were and contact them. Our concern with that, that would create open adoptions instead of closed adoptions, is that it would increase incentive for abortion. You know, it would make women less likely to give up their children for adoption. I mean, one of the incentives for adoption is you can give the child up and no one has to know, you can go on with your life.
And if you want an open adoption, you can opt for an open adoption
as well.
So it's a choice.
Right.
You know, so that's the real choice.
So, I mean, the death of this bill was a very good thing, a great pro-life victory. Those are the bad bills. There are some good bills that we're trying to pass. There's a bill that would create a task force to study the root causes of fatherlessness in Connecticut. That bill has now passed three committees. It's gotten further than it ever did before because the Family Institute of Connecticut Action has championed this bill. There's a lot happening on that bill, and hopefully, you know, within the next day or so, the Senate may
pass that bill. That's pretty
much
a no-brainer.
Yeah, you would think so. You would think so, but crazy things happen up there at the state capitol. There is also a bill to protect the right of parents to homeschool their children. Technically, the bill protects the right of parents to withdraw their children from the public schools. Right now, they actually have that right in Connecticut, but there are some government agencies in violation of the law that have been harassing homeschooling parents.
Oh.
So we wanted this bill to protect parents who homeschool their children. A lot of crazy stuff has happened with that bill. It's kind of up in the air. And, you know, I'm trying to go through these bills quickly and not get too bogged down in detail, but I could return to any of them. I just wanted to give a quick overview. And finally, the last bill, a good bill, was a bill that would raise the age at which minor girls must be counseled before receiving an abortion. Right now, the law in Connecticut is 15 and under. This bill that we raised would have at least raised it to 17 and under. That bill has died in committee. We're trying to bring it back as an amendment. So there's been some hits and misses, but overall, incredible progress during the 2008 session.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. We were just talking about teenagers and judgment. And Jody Rell just signed a bill saying that teenagers under the age of 18 can't drive after 11 o'clock at night. And yet, you know, because of their judgment, and yet those same teenagers could go out and get an abortion without any parental involvement whatsoever.
It's astounding. And, you know, that's what we were trying to do with the abortion counseling bill. There are a number of ways in which they're changing the law. I mean, it used to be traditionally that the age of majority in Connecticut was 16. And with juvenile crime and other laws, they're raising it to 18. So we just felt like, you know, that the majority is being raised to 18, that while they're doing this with other laws, this is just in keeping with that. And we actually had a lot of pro-abortion legislators who agreed with us.
Wow.
So we, you know, this is another interesting thing about 2008 with the fatherhood bill, with the homeschooling bill, with the abortion counseling bill, is we're making inroads with some of the folks up there who have traditionally been against us. We're forming new alliances. It's been a very, very different experience for the Family Institute at the State Capitol this year, and we're very happy about that.
Some of those things are nearly as silly as some of the, in some states, many states or most states, I'm not sure, where you need parental consent to give an aspirin to a child.
Oh, you do that here. Yeah.
But they
aspirin,
can go get an abortion
without
parental consent. Now, tell me how that makes any logic.
A tattoo, well, a suntan.
Yeah. A suntan. Oh, you mean a tanning booth.
A tanning parlor.
Yeah.
Or ear piercing. You can get your ears pierced without your parental
but this,
consent.
I mean, this major medical procedure.
I know.
Never mind
dangerous,
that it's the taking of
which kills
human
people.
Life. It's a major medical procedure that could affect you for the rest of your life. And look, the polls show something like 80% of the country supports parental notification laws. That's what this counseling bill is incremental. What we really would like is a parental notification law. Connecticut is one of only six states in the entire country that doesn't have at least a parental notification
law.
And
it's so important, too, for people to understand that in Connecticut alone, you know, how many times has Planned Parenthood been pointed out for taking girls, minor girls, who have been statutorily raped by an older man, and the man brings them into, you know, Planned Parenthood and they give them an abortion. Now, the parents never know about it. The parents don't know that she was raped by this man, and then they don't know that she's had the abortion. She could hemorrhage. She could, you know, get a septic shock, and no one would ever know about it or why the cause was. And it's so scary.
Well, we had this horrible incident in West Hartford about a year ago. This man, Adam Galt, who kidnapped this young teenager and kept her prisoner. Right. And she had an abortion through a relationship with him. And Planned Parenthood covered it up. They never reported it. It's just unbelievable. I mean, any other business, the sort of bad publicity that Planned Parenthood got out of the Adam Galt case and similar cases, any other business, certainly any other nonprofit, would have gone under for that. But Planned Parenthood, it shows you the incredible power and influence that they have.
It's governmentally sanctioned child abuse.
Yeah, and they're getting tons of tax dollars. I mean, it's hardly a nonprofit when they make such. They made $1 billion.
Yeah.
Last year for the first time.
Yeah, maybe you could talk about the tax dollars and the way many industries that we know of support Planned Parenthood. The people listening to this might be very surprised at the institutions and businesses that they think are good, solid, you know, family-supporting businesses support Planned Parenthood.
Komen, the breast cancer thing. You know, I'm getting emails asking that I support this and that through Komen, through breast cancer. They donate to Planned Parenthood.
Right.
I mean, very heavily. So, you know, it's really not something that that pro-lifers should have anything to do with. And that's what Roy's talking about. They have their hooks into all sorts of things that you would think are legitimate, but...
Well, the Gates Foundation, they're heavily supported by them. Even the Girl Scouts have gotten messed up with Planned Parenthood, especially in Texas, you know, giving awards to people who run Planned Parenthood in Texas. I mean, it's really become insidious, you know, just part of your everyday life, and they want to be in all of the schools, you know, and that's where...
That was these two sex ed bills.
Right.
I mean, that was Planned Parenthood and the AIDS activists. You know, like we said, Planned Parenthood, they have these connections all over this place. I mean, fighting AIDS, you'd think that's a good cause, but the AIDS activists were working hand in hand with Planned Parenthood to introduce these two sex ed bills at the state capitol would create $1 million grant that the schools could apply for to hire an outside vendor like Planned Parenthood to come in and teach the kids about sex education.
And not abstinence only.
Right, not abstinence only. They were vehemently opposed to that.
It's interesting because, and parents might not believe, you know, that this really affects them, but when I was registering my daughter for kindergarten, you know, you get a little packet, you know, your daughter should, you know, your kindergartner should know their ABCs and da-da-da. And there was a letter to the parents saying, all children, kindergarten through 12, will be learning about AIDS, you know, at an age-appropriate level. Not cancer, not heart disease, but that had to be pointed out. And I just remember being flabbergasted. And sure enough, not my kindergartner, but a friend of mine was teaching some after-school classes with her fourth grader. And three of the kids were like, you know, tittering, you know, should we tell her? And they were all upset. And one kid said, no, I don't want to hear it. He was, I mean, literally physically upset because they had been talking about AIDS in their fourth grade class and the sex word came up. Now, obviously, these kids are not ready for that. I mean, the kid was traumatized. You know, here it's something that he hadn't heard from his parents because he wasn't ready for it. And obviously, it was a very important thing. And why hadn't he heard it from his parents? I mean, he was so totally confused. I mean,
who are the schools to assault the innocence of these children? Who are they to make those decisions? Those decisions rightly belong with us. So this is something that needs to be fought root and branch.
I mean, I would have wanted to choke somebody if they had done that to my son.
It's more government-sponsored child abuse is exactly what it is.
That is just amazing. Ugh. So we're going to open the lines for phone calls if you have any questions for Peter or for Dr. Curlin. And I'm sure the producers will put the number up for you. So, Roy, when you I remember getting the emails from Peter about the homeschooling issue. Did you get on the ball and start writing your senators and representatives?
Yeah, we're certainly very active in that and send emails around to all our homeschooling friends about the issue and bills to support and bills not to support when those come up and affect us. You know, we believe that homeschooling is a fundamental right. Both given to us by the Constitution of the United States and by God, and certainly the church we belong to, the Catholic Church, upholds that right, that the parents are the first educators, primary educators of the children. We do defer to others, send kids to school and whatever, that's okay, but we have that right to choose to do that or not to do that. So we most homeschoolers belong to various homeschool legal associations, which assist us when legislation goes awry in helping us to defend our rights to do this. But we're very, very appreciative of the Family Institute of Connecticut to help us in this battle. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, we'd be floundering. You know, we don't have the ability to go up to the Capitol and find who to go to. We can go to rallies run by fine gentlemen like this who put their lives on the line effectively. I don't mean that they're going to be attacked and murdered, but that they spend their life and their professional life supporting and defending the rights of people like us. And, mm-hmm. It's just a terrific group that you belong to. And this man is a hero. A modern hero.
Yeah, I mean, it is great to get your blast emails and be able to write your legislators. And I tell you, they do respond. You know, you might write a lot of them at one time, but a lot of times you only get a couple back. But still, you know, it's great to be in touch with them and let them know, you know, where we stand.
And in fact, I think it's probably very important. If Peter gives out his the email address for the Family Institute or at least not the email, the web address, so people can get connected. Because not just the ability to do the blast emailings or get notified of these things, but when rallies occur mm-hmm. and you ask for people to come and support these great family values up at the Capitol, there's nothing that, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's nothing that affects a legislator more than seeing 1,000 of his or her constituents standing on the lawn asking for to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think you've got some rallies and things planned in the future, right?
We do. We're going to do a giant rally similar to the ones we've done in the past where we try to turn out thousands of people sometime this fall, late September or early October. And why? Why are we going to do this? Well, looming over all these other issues that we've been talking about today, we're still waiting on a ruling from the Connecticut Supreme Court as to whether or not they are going to impose same-sex marriage on Connecticut by judicial fiat. This effort to create this new thing called same-sex marriage is something we have defeated over and over and over again at the state capitol. Even in a state as liberal blue as Connecticut, even in a legislature as far left as the one we have in Hartford, people still understand that marriage is between a man and a woman. It's a dramatic victory that we've been able to preserve the definition of marriage in Connecticut. So our opponents have decided that democracy itself is the problem.
Right.
And they've gone to the state Supreme Court. They've filed a lawsuit asking the court, I mean, it's even some of the same lawyers that were involved in the case in Massachusetts, which is how they got same-sex marriage there, asking the court to just kind of impose from on high, change the definition of marriage undemocratically, take an issue as important as marriage. I mean, it's what the U.S. Supreme Court did with Roe versus Wade with abortion. Take something that important, reach down and say, you know what, something this big, we're going to decide it for you. We, your robed masters, your philosopher kings, we'll decide the really big issues. You little people with your elected representatives, well, they can focus on filling the potholes in your street. The really big issues about how we define human life, how we define marriage, we'll decide all that for you.
Right.
I mean, the Connecticut Supreme Court's own legitimacy is at stake here if they do this. And frankly, the right to self-government in Connecticut. So that's what our rally will be about in the fall. it will be a protest of that. We're waiting on the decision. We expect it to go against us. And also, we have this one silver bullet opportunity to reverse it. There's a question that will automatically be on the Connecticut ballot this November asking state voters if they want to hold a state constitutional convention. And we need to get a yes vote on that question on November 4th.
Wow.
It's our best shot to get some sort of right of initiative into our Constitution so that we can overturn the Supreme Court.
It's amazing because I remember when the Civil Unions Bill went through, you know, all of the legislators, mine included, said, oh, well, you know, this is just civil unions. It's airtight, you know, because I brought up the fact that, well, all they're going to do is take this to court and it's going to be overturned. Oh, no, they can't do that. There's absolutely no way they could do that. But you're saying that, well, there's always a way.
That's what's about. I mean, if the Supreme Court does what we think they're going to do, we expect the Supreme Court to rule in favor of same-sex marriage. Every single legislator who voted for the civil union bill bears responsibility for that, as well as Attorney General Blumenthal, who essentially threw the case. I mean, didn't even show up to argue the case himself, sent one of his subordinates. Very unusual for Dick Blumenthal. I mean, it was a high-profile, lots of media.
Argue it in front of the court.
He sent one of his subordinates to do it. Usually something this big, this high profile with the media, Attorney General Blumenthal shows up himself. He didn't do that. And all these legislators who voted for civil unions, we said it ourselves in 2005 when that bill passed. We told the legislators, you told your legislators, that, look, if you do this, it will make the Supreme Court more likely to impose same-sex marriage. It opens up that whole separate but equal argument, which, you know, as it happened, that was the argument that the plaintiffs made.
So it's amazing to me to think that, you know, the country, a wonderful country with such a wonderful constitution, democracy established, the best, I guess, established democracy in the entire world, that you can get this, as you called it, judicial fiat, to overturn what the will of the people, potentially. Well, they don't even test the will of the people. And I believe, and you can tell us, where they've actually taken to the people, most states have actually turned this down, right? Including states which are known to be deep blue liberal states.
Over 40 states have had direct referendums on protecting marriage, either to put an amendment directly into their state constitution. 27 states did that, or to, you know, by direct referendum pass a statute protecting marriages between a man and a woman.
Over 40 states. We weren't even given that choice.
No, we weren't. That's why we need a yes vote on the constitutional convention, so that we can have the same right that these other states had to let the people decide. Let the people decide whether or not marriage should be protected as the union of a man and a woman. In every state, except for one, Arizona was a very special case. There was a lot of shenanigans going on there from the other side. But in every other state where this was voted on, our side always won by an average of like 71%. We always won overwhelmingly, even in very liberal states like Oregon. Oregon is so liberal they have assisted suicide. Even a state that thinks it's okay to kill grandpa understands that marriage is between a man and a woman. So we're confident that if we could get this constitutional convention, if we could get a right to vote on this in Connecticut, we will prevail.
So the people listening to this broadcast should go onto the FIC website to make sure they keep up with when this rally is going to be.
Yes.
Tell their friends and also potentially connect with their legislators too.
Yes. Again, the website is ctfamily.org, www.ctfamily.org. And you can go to the website. You can also email me. My email address is pwolfgang@ctfamily.org. And, you know, watch our website, watch our blog on our website, where we're always posting new information.
I think we have a question, and I think it's from Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very good. What's something specific the public can do to push forth these issues in the legislature?
That's a good question, Brian.
Well, most importantly, call your legislators. Find out who your legislators are, who your state senator is, who your state representative is. Go to the Family Institute's website. We have software on the website where you can plug in your zip code and find out that information. But these legislators are most likely to listen to their own constituents. A phone call is better than an email. A letter is better than an email. An actual visit is better than a phone call. The more that you're willing to put into it, the more effort you put into it to go meet with the legislators, the more they're going to pay attention. Get your friends to do likewise. The way the legislators record calls from constituents is they assume for every call they get from a constituent that there's three other constituents
right.
who feel the same way and just haven't called in. And that's what we need to do. That's number one. Number two, and this is really important too, is elections. You know, it ultimately does come down to elections. And what we found, having done this for years now, is what these legislators care most about is whether or not they're going to win their next election. So make sure they feel the heat if they don't have the proper pro-life, pro-family views. And make sure that you know who the good pro-family legislators are and who the bad ones are, and that you get out there and support pro-family candidates in the fall. And again, we have a political action committee as well, so you can watch our website, and as we get closer to November, we'll be putting out our list of endorsements.
So that's where people can find out whether or not they're, besides going to them directly, they can find out whether or not the people running against them or them, you know, your legislators themselves, the incumbents, are pro-life, pro-family.
That's right.
There's not too many in right now, so you can almost assume they're not. But the big thing is the elections coming up. We had a short session this year, legislative session. Do you think that's why they were being very careful not to really crunch, you know, step on families?
This is something that we've seen. Take for instance Plan B. We last year in 2007 lost a very big battle for religious liberty. A law was passed that will force the state's four Catholic hospitals to provide a drug that in some instances may be abortifacient. They first brought that bill up in 2006, and it went nowhere. It didn't even get out of committee. Why? Because it was an election year. And this is what we've seen over and over again. Our opponents on the other side, the pro-abortion activists, the pro-same-sex marriage activists, all the anti-family forces, they do their craziest, most aggressive stuff in non-election years. Odd-numbered years. They hold back, they do only incremental things in the even-numbered years. Why? Because the theory is, if you can get same-sex marriage in, say, February of 2007, by the time November of 2008 comes along, people forget.
So we have a question from, I think, Bob in Lebanon. Hello?
Maybe not.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Do you have a question?
Yes, Anna, I was just wondering if members of your panel had any ideas of how we, the average citizen, get the legislators more involved or even interested in family matters?
That's a good question.
Again, I mean, they need to hear from their constituents. I would say, you know, if you work together as a team, if you organize, if you show up in force as a group to meet with your legislator, and it helps if you're their constituents, if it's your particular legislator, that's what makes all the difference in the world. Something else that makes a big difference is be informed, be well informed. Make sure you know what you're talking about when you go to the state capitol. But it is important to go to the state capitol in Hartford to meet with them personally or to meet with them in their office hours in your own district. Make sure they feel the heat. I know they're very, very sensitive to what their constituents think because they want to win their next election. However, they have lobbyists all over the building from the other side. I mean, there's dozens of these organizations all coalescing, all sort of working together in favor of abortion, in favor of same-sex marriage, and other bad things. And in order to counter their influence, the only thing that can really counter it is if they're bombarded by their own constituents.
And sometimes it's intimidating, you know, for Joe Citizen to say, I'm going to go and talk to my legislator. So, you know, under those conditions, under those situations, you can work with groups like the Family Institute of Connecticut, who will help you. You can be part then of a large crowd, and every single person in that crowd is important. They have people who count those they'll be underreported in the press, of course, but the legislators want to know how many people are there doing that. And so every single head counts. You know, go with some friends, part of a big rally. You don't have to face down anyone yourself. If you want to, that's fantastic. As I say, you know, if you're making a phone call, the legislators will often, you'd be surprised, they'll often take your phone call. Their aides will put it through if they're there, or they sometimes get back to you. And then if you can't, then an email is a simple way to do it. Quick email. I think the Family Institute actually provides pro forma emails that allow you and actually connects you in with your group, right?
That's right. The key is to get on our email list. If you get on our email list is absolutely crucial. You'll get emails regularly from us about things that are happening at the state capitol, and we have this software where if there's an issue, we will have a link at the bottom of the email. You click on the link, and we've already prepared a message that you can send directly to your own legislators or to all the legislators of a given committee where an issue is happening.
So the point I was making is sometimes it's difficult to know the whole of, you know, Hartford and legislator, what do I do? Well, working through groups like this can make it easy, and you can do as much or as little as you're able to do in your circumstance.
I think another easy thing, too, that people can do, and I don't think people take advantage of this enough, is join their own party affiliate in their own town. You know, because that's where those legislators come from. You know, they don't. They're not in Hartford forever, you know. And so you'll meet the people, you know, the town councilors, the mayors, you know, the different, you know, school board members, and that's where they're grooming. Those are the people they're grooming. You'll find out what kind of people these are, and they'll know you, and you'll have more influence on them once they, you know, move up. Or it could be you. You could end up going up to Hartford.
We do need to locate, identify good pro-life, pro-family folks who are willing to run for office. Very, very important.
Yeah, and the town count, the town committee meetings, they're once a month. You know, they're very short meetings. It's very interesting. You really find out a lot about what's going on in town, and you meet a lot of very interesting people. So I really highly encourage people to join them.
And you shouldn't be intimidated by them. They're your representatives.
Right?
You're paying for them. And they're required to have to allow you to be there and to have your say in those committee meetings.
Yeah, and the only thing you have to fear is that they'll ask you to run. So, do you guys have some pretty good prospects coming up in the fall for pro-family candidates? No particular.
we're looking at the candidates now. Right now, unfortunately, it's the last 2 weeks of the legislative session, so we're just swamped with the focus on that. And we have some other projects, too, that we're working on. We've started a new youth wing of the Family
How
Institute.
How is that going? I did hear about that.
Watch for the email alert that we'll be sending out tomorrow. It will include a video. We're gonna link to the Friars video of this young woman, Chelsea Rankin, 17-year-old Christian homeschooled student from Burlington, who gave sort of the opening speech at our last rally to unveil the Family Institute's youth wing. She was incredible. These kids represent the future. You know, we have guys like Roy who are raising good, big Christian families, and we're at the point now where some of these kids are coming of age, and they're already showing that what a bright future Connecticut could have.
So how big is the youth group, and how does youth get involved?
I'd say it's about 30 kids right now.
Oh, that's good.
And
It
just started. It's a mixture of homeschooled kids, teenage, high school kids, as well as college-age kids that we've connected to through various campus ministries in the greater Hartford area. And, you know, we want to form them into a pro-family strike force. And that's already begun to happen. It happened with Chelsea Rankin's speech. And it also happened with another young woman, Valerie Barbosa, from a neuroscience major, age 20, from Trinity College, who went to the state capitol, testified on the sex ed bill, and just blew them away. They never saw her coming. She was incredible.
What did she have to say?
She exposed Planned Parenthood. This was someone who had done her homework, Planned Parenthood was right there in the room. She talked about some of the things we just talked about here in the course of this show, about how they're a $1 billion industry, about the money that they get through our tax dollars, and about how their real purpose is abortion, that they're the largest provider of abortions in the United States, and therefore they should have nothing to do with providing sex education to our students. And it was interesting because, you know, this is the way the other side does it. They get, you know, they have these young teen peer counselors that they call them, that they send to speak. And so what we did is we put up some of our students, and they were very surprised at how great she was.
Wow. Yeah. So I think we have another caller, Ellen from Willimantic. What?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello. Hi, this is Dawn.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I have a question that concerns me regarding the liberal laws surrounding same-sex unions. My concern as a wife and a mother in a traditional union ordained by God, I want to know are concerning the long-term ramifications surrounding these liberal laws, if they're permanently put into effect nationwide. We certainly hope that's not the case, but what does it mean for traditional marriages? Are they going to be disbanded? What lies the future? What are your thoughts on that? That's my question.
That's a good question, because
just like Roe v. Wade, if Connecticut falls, the Supreme Court will surely follow, and all the laws in the United States will go.
Well, the ramifications are enormous. They're enormous. And she asked about will traditional unions be disbanded? Well, no. The attack on marriage won't happen that way. But what we've seen, the way in which it erodes marriage, we've seen in, for instance, the Scandinavian countries, where the pro-same-sex marriage agenda is further advanced from what it is here, is that normal marriage, traditional marriage, natural marriage declines.
Right.
Fewer people. Look, marriage is tough. Marriage requires sacrifice. Real marriage, traditional marriage. And in order for people to be willing to enter into it society-wide, society needs to privilege marriage as something special.
And not cheapen it.
Right. And not cheapen it by making a traditional normal marriage as just one item on a sort of do-it-yourself salad bar.
Right.
Well, you can get married, or you can just cohabitate with your girlfriend or boyfriend, or you could enter into a same-sex civil union. When traditional marriage does become just one option among many, fewer people enter into marriage.
Right.
That hurts marriage, that hurts society.
It hurts children.
It hurts children, because children do best in a home with both their mother and father. And marriage is that institution in society by which children come together and are raised in a home with both their biological mother and father. That's the institution that creates the greatest amount of stability for children. So if you lessen the instance of traditional marriage, it's very bad for children. Children do need to grow up in a home with both their mom and dad. Also, if this does become the law of the land, if two men can get married, why not three men?
Yeah.
So the ramifications will be endless. And also, too, with religious liberty, with school curriculum. Roy, did you want to jump in?
Oh, I was just going to add to it, and you're probably about to get there. The consequences to religious freedom will be huge. So you get a minister of religion, a priest or a Protestant minister or a rabbi who is pro-life, pro-family, who says, I'm not going to marry two men and two women, will be able to be prosecuted with the full extent of the law, lose their tax-exempt status, etc. And, parents who believe that the school shouldn't impose this sort of thing on their children won't be allowed pull their children out of classes.
We're seeing that happen in Boston.
Would become a hate crime to say that I believe in true marriage, in marriage between a man and a woman is a true marriage. That would become a hate crime to even say that.
Well, that's it. There's this same-sex marriage is this really big new idea, and the big new idea, among other things, is that, you know, if marriage can be redefined, if you can have this thing called same-sex marriage, well, then all of us who disagree with it, we will be treated as the legal equivalent of bigots, of racists.
Yes. Right.
And that has real legal ramifications.
Right.
As Christian parents in Boston are already learning, as Catholic Charities in Boston is learning, they had to get out of the adoption business. So these are ways in which traditional religion, traditional parental rights over our own children, were slowly being pushed to the margins, were being made second-class citizens.
And it really brings us all the way back full circle to Pope Benedict, and that we are the stewards of the truth. And, you know, just by saying that, you know, a man and a man is equal to a woman and a man in a marriage is great, doesn't necessarily mean that it's true.
Pope Benedict at Yankee Stadium, he spoke of this false dichotomy in which we're told that faith needs to be outside of the political arena, away from the public square, and he urged us to resist that. And that's a message especially for the state of Connecticut and New England in general. That, unfortunately, that false dichotomy is something that's been assimilated,
yes,
among Catholics here in New England and in Connecticut, and that needs to be fought with
absolutely
everything we've got. We have every right and a duty to bring these values into the public square.
Because it's our country, too, you know?
Absolutely.
And it doesn't... We're not helping anybody by letting all these laws become law of the land, and it's certainly hurting people, you know? What's next? You have 2 weeks left. And,
2 weeks, we need a lot of prayers, and we need a lot of phone calls, and we need everyone to go to our website.
What's
and get
the worst case scenario?
Worst case scenario is that I would say probably the transgender bill, if that were to pass, that would be huge. I mean, all the things that remember the last caller said, what are the ramifications on same-sex marriage? Well, we'll see significant ramifications on this transgender bill if this bill should pass. It's really a sort of weapon to force those of us, again, out of the public realm who have traditional viewpoints. I've spoken about public schools and how it would affect public schools. Even if you're just a businessman, business person, who has, you know, you have to hire people who will deal with the public, a receptionist, mm-hmm, a secretary, a salesman. If this law passes, if you hire some man and afterwards he decides he wants to come into work in a dress and that could affect your business, your hands are tied. You won't be able to do anything about it. And these are ways in which those of us with traditional values are being pushed out of the public square. We're being made second-class citizens. It's a way to criminalize those of us who have those traditional viewpoints.
Just one question, Peter, as we get towards the end. How the Family Institute of Connecticut is an incredible institution. Do you get any tax dollars to support you, like Planned Parenthood does?
Thank you so much for asking. We survive entirely on private donations.
Yeah.
So it's only on a wing and a prayer and the grace of God and the good support of the sort of people listening, watching this show right now, that keep the Family Institute going.
Well, thank you so much for all that you do every day, and thank you for joining us. Thank you to Roy. Thank you for joining us. We hope that you have learned something. We hope that you talk with your family and friends about the things that you've learned. Get active in Connecticut politics, and we hope when you look in the mirror the next time, you'll realize yours is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.